We are recording.
Okay, this is February the 22nd, and we're here at the Richmond County Home Occupancy Text Amendment Article 92 Subcommittee, and we're going to call the meeting to order. Dave, what do you have to discuss?
First item is an administrative one. Catherine Frickman was originally appointed as part of this committee by the Planning Commission, and she has been unable to attend three meetings in a row and is fairly consistent with our policy. I think at this time it's probably time to take a vote that Catherine be removed from the committee. I'll give her a phone call and let her know.
We should make a motion that we remove Catherine from our committee. And
I'll second.
Okay. Call to order. All in favor, say aye. Raise your hand.
Aye.
Okay. And all not in favor.
Opposed.
Opposed or
none.
I thought you were actually
saying
you were opposed. No.
Just tell me what to do. Get out of what I'm doing. Say it.
Okay.
I think that motion passes. I'll call Catherine. And, I know she'd like to see your final decision. She is interested in it. Catherine owns a kennel and was very interested in the process, but she's working full-time and running a kennel as well, so just didn't have the time to make the meeting. So,
I understand.
Anyway, for the items on your agenda, we've got the typing exercise, which is not checking your typing speed or anything like that, but it's an exercise that Valerie and I put together. The first phase of that, and we left it on the board here, was looking at different types of home occupations and what possible impacts they might have, or what levels of impact we thought might be appropriate for an exempt home occupation business, a type 1 and type 2. Given the fact that a type 1 and a type 2 and what those processes are still undefined, we still wanted to kind of approach this from the degree of impacts and how we might separate these. Now, we used our draft ordinance as a guideline to begin with, and that we're probably going to go with a couple of different levels. We could also have a type 3 or a conditional use permit. One of the guidelines that we had thought of, it, or just some of the thinking behind this, was maybe this is a, you know, two-digit, a three-digit, and a four-digit fee. Given the level of review, this is more public hearing or that sort of thing. So that was kind of where we started, and the committee, Nancy and Rick, last time, were putting some of these numbers in here, in the net, on where they felt those impacts might be. So we produced that for you, distributed it to the rest of the committee, so you could fill that out. I don't know if you've had a chance to do that for it. And Dave. And then we also added to that, kind of looking at typing from the other angle, which is for particular uses. And most of the uses that are in that second step of the exercise are permitted uses currently in Josephine County for home occupations. Some of them are not. There are uses that I've run across as a land use planner over the years, and just some others that I threw in there to make you think a bit. So this part of it, I'm going to now hand it over to Valerie, and she'll be your scribe and kind of walk you through it. And she came up with these documents.
Okay, so we have some long lists here, so we don't want to get too caught up. What we really need to focus on is the types of impact that would be associated with these types of businesses. And using the descriptions that we have on the first sheet, kind of giving an idea of where we think these should fall. And again, we can also determine if something's going to be prohibited. It's something that definitely is something to consider. I know Nanette has a definite opinion about some of those issues that come up. And it might be that we just say that we're just not going to have some types of home occupations because they just don't belong in residential neighborhoods. And I apologize if I stumble on my words. I'm lacking a little bit of sleep and I'm a little bit dumb tonight. So, Okay, so Nancy.
Yeah.
Looks like we're looking at your type of business. Have you? And you've never had any type of issues with any of your neighbors, have you?
No.
And you don't typically, I mean, do you do by appointment? How do you handle your business?
We originally started by appointment only.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we still do mostly appointment. Occasionally we'll have somebody walk in, but it's rare.
Mm-hmm.
This time of year, it gets absolutely crazy.
All that.
You know, and one of the things I was looking at is if we choose customers per day, this time of year, we could easily exceed it, where maybe November, December, we don't.
Right.
And that was one of the issues I was looking at, not knowing which way it was going to go.
About how many customers a day would you have during a busy time?
During busy time of the year, we can have probably up to 16.
Okay. But most of the year, like, let's say June, July, August, September, what would be your average per day there?
Probably just, and I would be looking more at October, November, December. I would estimate maybe 3 or 4 a day.
Okay.
Now, one thing that we might want to note with Nancy's business, though, too, is she's not working alone.
That's right.
She has, she's come in and had a second review in order to have a few more employees, and so she has a good size accounting office.
I do.
Is accounting or bookkeeping, or does it matter?
Bookkeeping and income tax.
Okay.
If you look at the time frame, the length of stay with each one of those clients, you basically say a lot of them just dropping stuff off. I mean, are they there for 15 minutes? Are they there for an hour?
If it's actually a tax appointment, an hour is what we allot, unless we do have a special list that some of them are 2 hours.
So you're saying you're getting 16 a day, and the average is an hour?
Mm-hmm.
You working in the wee hours a night?
No, I have employees. But yes, I worked up to
30. And some other things to consider too are, if you are an appointment only type of business, your need for signs might not be so much. You might just have something on your mailbox in order to make sure they're not showing up at your neighbor's house, but you're not having drop-ins, you're not relying on a sign to bring your business to you. So those are different things to consider as we go through the list.
Yeah.
What type of impacts, you know, we're trying to not make impact on the neighborhood. So things like signs count, that traffic counts, you know.
Right. And Dave, just to fill in from the last meeting, it wasn't so much how many people are there or how long they're there. It's more of a question of the road traffic, the shared driveways.
Well, and then when you look at the type of deliveries, you know, there might be someone who has a lot of UPS deliveries, but then there's someone who's going to have a box truck or a larger truck. You know, it's going to vary with the type of business. Okay, so accounting, bookkeeping, keeping in mind that there's the one single person who's doing this at their home and picking up.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I would say
Nancy's on the extreme end for customers. Mm-hmm. But there are those who sit in their office by themselves and pick up their paperwork, or, you know.
So for the most part, they would be kind of exempt from anything, I would say, for the most part.
It seems like at a certain level that you can consider.
I would advise that looking at this sheet, and I don't know if you guys see, Rex got some marks on his, and so is Nanette. Ward, did you ever get him?
No.
Weren't able to do that while you were drywalling.
No.
Dave, did you get a chance?
I just got one last night because I was down for the...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I would think we go through this list. It's okay to check 2 boxes.
Yeah.
If you think it's somewhere between exempt and one, you might even think it is exempt 1 and 2, depending upon, you know, maybe you can see it in all 3 spots. That's okay. What I'd like to do is to get from all of you, and I think Valerie and I can maybe fill out this list as well, given our familiarity with home occupations that we've seen, and then kind of bring those together. We'll give you a final one, sort of here's the number of votes in each column, and it's okay to vote for more than one, because you could see the expansion of the lone bookkeeper who gets a couple of clients a day, or Nancy who's got, you know, several employees.
Well, and you easily could have a bookkeeper that goes to the client, picks it up, and comes back.
And again, at what point do we consider that the exempt or type one is her growth pattern? If she's saying she's got 16 clients a day, even with two or three employees, at what point do you say enough's enough working on the house and actually move into the office?
They didn't. They said you can't have any more than
this many employees.
Right. That's the drawing
board
right there.
Parameters. Right.
Yeah.
And one of the things to consider as we're looking at this list in a general way is that I think that of all the applications that come through this office or any land use office, that these have the most variability, not only because each one of these businesses is going to have their own way, each business owner is going to have their own way of doing the business, how many employees they have, and if they're going to go pick up their own materials or have them delivered. There's so many different variables. And then the location. Mm-hmm. Are they, you know, in a subdivision with 1 acre lots? Are they, you know, on 10 acres in a very, you know, backward rural area? So there's so many different things to consider. This is going to be general. When these come in, they're really specific. There's a lot of details to them, a lot of subjective detail.
And this is just sort of a way to basically color that and bring it into a more... These two exercises don't stand alone. They get melded together.
Yeah.
I think the way we write an ordinance, I can tell you... it's a long lecture, so I won't go into it. The problem with prescriptive zoning. We have prescriptive zoning in our rural areas. This is what you can do. Here's the list. If you're not on the list, you're prohibited. We don't want to go there with home occupations because, as you know, home occupations can run the whole gamut, from A to Z, everything in between. So how we would eventually construct an ordinance is going to be this kind of construction based on impacts, based on things that we can measure, based on the expectations that neighbors would have, and the kind of impacts that we're going to allow, mitigate, or prohibit. Mm-hmm. But a way to think about that is to think about an auto dealer or an antique store or ceramics production or dog and cat grooming or kennel. I mean, that's how we start thinking about these things in terms of impacts. And I think it'll be interesting. Hopefully, what I envision is a matrix that kind of pulls impacts and our discussion about that and then the types of uses together where we can get a better understanding of what we're really talking about. And even though there's not a... I would not advise putting a list of uses in a zoning ordinance. We have that in the Merlin area right now, and it is a list that there's some confusion over whether that's a prescriptive list or whether it's a descriptive use list. If it's descriptive, the D, and you're saying this is what's allowed and it kind of looks like this, then that's one way to approach it. And we could do that in this ordinance. You know, but the problem with those kind of ordinances is that people start looking at as a prescriptive list, and I don't want somebody to come in here, a potential home business, they look at our ordinance or they look at it online and go, gosh, you know, I'm not one of those things. I guess I can't do it. Or I'm going to be doing it illegally or whatever.
Yeah, because I think you're going to bash your head against a wall there.
Right.
You really want to get more people into compliance.
Right.
And have more of them registered. Right. So you really do know what's going on.
So this kind of an exercise helps us as staff, maybe as an internal policy document, that if we're going to type these things, 1, 2, or 3, we come up with a checklist, and there's going to be those things that are kind of fuzzy. Maybe, Nancy, you were a type 1 when you started, and now you're a type 3 because of the employees.
Yeah.
It helps us make those distinctions.
Yeah, because all of these numbers would change depending on how many employees each one of these businesses has. So that's a big factor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so we need to figure out kind of what are we going to allow for employees in order to
get... Which is on this chart.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But generally...
Because you have a face to that.
Yeah. Generally, computer consultants don't have a bunch of employees.
Right.
I mean, the nice thing about being a computer consultant is you have no overhead.
And it's like the electric motor manufacturer. You know, if he does it by himself at home when he's just one of those little, you know, that's not a big deal. But if he's, you know,
right,
if he's got 10 employees now, it's a big deal. So he doesn't belong at home.
Right.
He belongs in town at a shop. See, so we're kind
right.
And some of them almost by by definition. Firework sales?
Yeah.
Excuse me? Well, and remember,
you know,
when we
you're going to have some people. You're going to have customers.
Yeah. The other jurisdictions that we looked at didn't allow certain types, and I don't know where that falls into, but didn't allow certain types of fireworks or explosives.
Right, and that's why we have a prohibitive list.
Well, and I can really see that if you're talking a smaller acreage, you know, versus a 10-acre versus a lot, for instance.
Well, even when, but not only when you're on smaller acreage and you've got more dense development residentially, then you're dealing with structure and human life that is a concern. But once you move on to larger lots, then you're looking at the resource. So then you're concerned with your forest fires, and there might be adjacent BLM lands. And so, I mean, either way, it's
an issue.
Yeah.
Can I make a suggestion, maybe?
Sure.
That somebody do the tallying, and we go through and tell which box we put it in.
I'll tally.
And then that'll give us an idea if we're even all in the same ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
Or
not.
Sure. Yeah. Having one document can facilitate discussion and keep us going. I'll call them out, and Valerie, keep track.
Okay.
County bookkeeping. Ward.
It's out.
Dave.
But what if they have employees?
Then it's a different story. See, this is
this exercise, why don't we look at things at a more basic level? If it looks like something that's definitely going to have employees, we'll consider it that way. But
so if we could look at type one and say zero employees? I mean,
well, we
you know, what are
well,
there? Some guidance there, but I, to a certain extent, I want you to kind of ignore that.
Okay.
And just when you're thinking about this, just look at them and, you know, what if you think it deserves three checks, exempt type one and type two, because of employees being the factor, then go ahead and check every box.
See, I think we do need some parameters here, and I think we should figure, you know, just for this tally, maybe no employees or one employee. Maybe for the whole list, then we
but
don't
then
have to
check.
But
you can't really put it in the different.
Because then we're not
so
checking all this
list. Type three.
Well,
type three
are we
might
just
be
talking about exempt ones right now.
Right. It's a difficult little tally here. It's not quite as cut and dry as it.
And home occupations aren't. They aren't.
Yeah, it's like.
But I think in order for us to say what ranks what is, we have to know what the definitions of these are. We either going
to
have exempt?
We have
that.
We have a little cover sheet.
You don't have to. We're going to matrix this thing and put it together,
okay.
And that will help us define. And then we have another discussion on whether those things really kind of fit. But
I think
remember, we're not going to define it by use. We're going to define it by impacts, ultimately.
Right. I think that's what we're talking about.
This is just a guide.
We just jumped down to the aircraft communication. That is a situation where it's going to affect people by interrupting their phone service or their TV or whatever else. Then that would have to be, you're not going to be in the neighborhood.
Or maybe I want a public notice on that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, the usage is, I think, what we're really going to focus on more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we don't, I like Nancy's suggestion, but if it saves us time, this is a fairly long list. And we want to just have people do it on their own, and we'll collect them and we'll tally them.
Just turn this in. And
we can do that, too.
And then you could go with that, and then people that don't want to turn it in, don't turn it in.
Well, I think we're going to talk about that. That's a good idea.
Sorry,
we're good, okay. What we need to do is go through, like I just said, the aircraft communication, maybe be more specific on, are those ones that we should discuss a little bit more. Yeah, then we can
turn
the list in.
Yeah, maybe go through the list and say,
are there some that should be discussed?
If we're going through and just serve those uses serve as a catalyst, so to speak,
to
talk about some of the impacts and issues, then we can go through there.
I mean, that's fine. I'm just scared of pursuing that exercise because already something as basic as bookkeeping, where it's just really an administrative office, created a debate. I mean, when we get into some of these others, there's whole different levels of small engine repair. The boat repair, we could basically get into a debate over every single one of these that turns into a half hour. And I don't have that time tonight.
Nor do I.
nor do any of us. But are there anyone... Let me ask this, then we'll turn it upside down. Are there any that made the prohibited list?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, quite a few.
Which ones?
Auto body, welding.
Mm-hmm.
auto dealer, motorcycle repair, firework sales, firefighting, and the kennel, and the wildlife sanctuary made my list.
Now I'm curious, firefighting, because I presume that they would be doing it away from their site.
Right, but if they have a vehicle that's called for an emergency, firefighting is something that's an emergency service. If you have to leave at high speed with sirens blaring.
But I don't, my familiarity with this is more of rural type wildland fighting. Mm-hmm. So they're called in, you know, there might be a large fire starting and then they wait to see if private contractors are going to be called in. So it's not like you're, you know, sirens blaring, you know, it's more of a...
Having been a wildland firefighter, we don't have sirens.
Oh, okay.
There are none.
I quickly take that off the list.
In fact, most of the rigs I've worked on don't even have flashing lights.
I would like to see what the NN has prohibited, of course.
I'll do it at the end.
Because you are the expert and you do
see... We want to hear from you guys.
Bars and bikes.
You're on the committee.
Yeah, but so. You can look at it. Look at it and see if there's any that jump out.
What do you
out
got, Nanette? Come on, jump in.
She's trying not to have them do something.
What do you have as prohibited?
I have a kennel in the wildlife sanctuary. Prohibited on
the... You are our expert in the field because you deal with this.
And you're going to see some of that later. So okay. That's what the PowerPoint's for.
But, you know, like an antique store.
Okay.
No, that's retail
sales. It's retail sales.
It doesn't belong on there.
Okay.
I, too, believe that anything with repairing cars, you know, vehicles, motorcycles, should not be. They should be on a commercial spot.
So your auto body and welding, towing, auto dealer, auto parts wholesale, all those, you'd kick out?
Yep.
Okay. The auto parts wholesale, that one.
Yeah, that one I didn't.
Yeah, that one I didn't.
How big are the parts?
How many delivery choices?
Actually, usually it's more of an administrative. It's just coordinating drop ships. Mm. It's like a phone.
If things are done online and they're just maybe storing parts in the garage, I don't have a problem with that. It's when they need to physically have a vehicle there or a lot of customers coming there, then they're an auto parts store.
Right. Now, most of the wholesalers, it's basically they're parking. It's kind of like the Snap-on Tools guy. They have their truck. They have their inventory in their truck. They leave that morning from their place and they go to the different places and
they
drive.
So they just have their inventory on their property? Mm-hmm. That's okay.
And
you don't have customers, you don't have vehicles outside, you don't have a lot of noise.
And most of their restocking of parts comes through like a UPS type, FedEx type thing, not a big delivery truck.
If you take a look at the two that you had here in town, Hawk for one, in Merlin, and then the Suzuki, the other Suzuki one here in town.
All the while, yeah.
They're taking parts from older vehicles or working with remanufactured people, so there are they've got stuff all over the place.
Yeah, that's a different issue, yeah.
Yeah, and they are wholesaling it to other people. So somebody gets a Suzuki that's smashed up, they call them because they are a Suzuki wholesaler parts person.
Yeah, we need to put a distinction between OEM and... Because what you're talking about is like junkyard
parts all lined up, everything else. Yes, they've all been pulled out.
So then the distinction on our chart over here would be outdoor storage. Do you have a bunch of cars outside that you're pulling parts from, or do you have boxes in a garage that you put in your truck?
Right.
So there's definite ways to make the distinction when those type of applications come in.
One of the things that planners do is visit, it's always chapter one in your zoning code, and that's your definitions. At what point are you a guy who collects cars and then you're a car lot?
Mm-hmm.
At what point are you, you know, a family reunion, we have a few people over and some live music, and then are you Woodstock?
Mm-hmm.
So, I did that one for Rick. Anyway, automobile wrecking yard, we have a definition for it. Any property where the dismantling, salvaging, storing, disposing, or selling of parts of vehicles or trailers is conducted in the open storage of five or more unlicensed vehicles and not in running condition from which parts have not been removed.
Five or more.
You're a wrecking yard.
I know.
A wrecking yard would be a prohibited use.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But maybe an auto parts wholesale dealer won't be. And that's when we start making those distinctions.
Five cars wouldn't be enough to build a car.
Right. Okay, how's your list coming there?
Okay, well, if we want to carry on.
Yeah.
I personally, landscape supplies, I know we have some permits.
Were you at your first page? Were you at your first page?
Oh, you went through that.
No, we didn't.
You did, we didn't.
Find a prohibited list?
Yeah, well, we only went with auto repairs.
Okay, well, boat sales repair.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, any sort of vehicle sales, they belong on a commercial lot.
Exactly.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Go ahead and get
carburetor list. Repair, if it's just kind of, I'm not familiar with that.
I'm not.
If we have customers coming, then again, we're looking at that. Do they need to put it in the car and rev up cars? Is there noise?
Do you have to cancel it? That's what I didn't know.
Yeah.
Isn't everything fuel injection left?
Yeah, you won't get any customers if you're a carburetor.
Yeah.
Don't
so.
Carburetors.
Okay, so on your case after that, carburetor.
Another one I'm not sure about is electronic motor manufacturing.
Oh, those tend to be really small. It's just kind of basically wrapping coils around.
You're winding copper wire around something.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we don't have cars. Okay,
no.
So it's okay.
And they're really quiet, too.
All right, equipment, rental and sales. There again, that to me is a commercial spot. Excavation service. I've got that marked as prohibited, but, you know, we've got one that's, we'll show you on here, it says it's an excavation business, but some of those, just like contractors, they're basically
their vehicles, and they're
one truck, you know. They can't have two pieces of equipment stored on there, and that's fine.
Talked about up there.
Uh-huh. So I think that's probably okay, and I would think that would be either a type 2 or a CUP kind of thing. Fireworks sales, I have a question mark. Seasonal, I mean, is it really going to, they're usually on the high commercial, you know, spots, right? Along highways.
Well, unless somebody's gone to Chinatown and brought a whole garage back to their house, but no, they're going to be in commercial.
Yeah,
I think two reasons that should be prohibited very clearly. One is specifically the traffic. It is going to be high load of traffic. I mean, they're very low cost items, so the only way you can make it is to have a high volume of traffic.
I just don't see that in rural areas that much. I mean, I have never had a problem. I've never had a complaint about that. You know, I know that. They do that all up and down Redwood Highway.
Well,
but out of their homes.
And there's a difference between manufacturing fireworks and sales of fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who sell to the type of fireworks that you're going to have permits for that they do at the fairgrounds. So it might not be a high volume, but there's definitely something explosive. Stored.
And then that was my second reason is, do you really want explosives stored at your neighbor's homes?
Have you ever been in attendance with when a firework stands burns? Yeah. But I have, and it's pretty spectacular. Yeah.
So I put that either as a CUP or it's prohibited.
Okay.
I haven't dealt with that yet. Golf cart repair, I know it's a little vehicle, but I still wouldn't. I think it should be on a residential. Second page, like I said, landscape supplies. To me, that really seems like that's more of a commercial. It should be in a commercial thing, and I know there are ones there. And we've actually had a few that are kind of feuding about that. Machine shop, again, should be commercial. Mobile home dealer. I think that really should be commercial.
Is this your prohibited list or your commercial list?
They want to know what I was saying, prohibited. And I'm marking them as prohibited because I think they should be on a commercial piece of property.
All right. Keep going.
Secondhand store. Again, that's retail sales. Sign manufacturing. Seems like that should be in a commercial spot. I haven't dealt with any complaints about any of them. Especially auto assembly, same thing. Prohibited should be commercial. Storm windows. Now, if the inventory is kept inside and you're not having people come, then that could be, you know, type 2 or...
Typically for something like that, you're going to be ordering specific to a job that you are about to do. So mm-hmm. it would be moving. I mean, you would have very little inventory, I would think, and it would be moving through pretty quickly.
Yeah. I've dealt with a door.
Most of the storm window people I know, you just have the display window, mm-hmm. and then your drop ship. You're not even ordering the inventory and bringing them over. The inventory is going directly to the site.
To the site. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that could be a two, you know, but, I thought that was questionable to me. Tool sales and repair. Really?
That's where I looked at that as being the Snap-on guy.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what you meant by that.
Yeah, that's a question mark. Travel trailer rental and sales, absolutely not.
Yeah,
that should be commercial.
Unless there's no inventory.
They're doing it online.
Well, no. Basically, they're a rep. So they just have catalogs, and then they sell off their catalogs.
I'm hearing that description about mm-hmm. a lot of these kind of uses, and I think mm-hmm. that's, you know, when we're looking at one of these in here, the one, exempts or ones, we can define something like that. That
right. It but isn't so much dependent on what you're selling, it's how you're selling.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
And if it's all internet sales or it's, you know, taking orders and delivering off-site, no on-site storage of the sales materials or whatever, that's a definition that we can capture within a type 1 or an exempt business definition.
Is that, so it's got an auto dealer on here, but, you know, I know that there's some that they just go to these auctions and they buy them, but then they've got buyers for them, so they never have any cars on their property?
Right.
Right. They're just an office.
Yeah.
But here, well, but how it got applied with the new, well, not the new, but the DMV law that is out now is that
yeah.
if you are approving a site so that they can get that license, the DMV actually says that it has to have the ability to actually work as a lot. And if they can't do a lot there, then you cannot give them a sign. We sign off. The planning office signs off on DMV licenses.
Oh, cool. Then we don't have to worry about that.
So in order for them to even get that dealer's license, you are required to know that they have an approved lot for the address that they're applying for.
Yeah.
Right. And we're not approving lots.
Yeah.
So
but you can have a second location as well, too, so... You can't have two locations with your dealer's license.
Okay, well, right.
So you could right. have an office and then have your actual cars at another location. So,
well, we're supposed to sign off on both, and I think what Valerie is saying is, and we heard another law another rule change at DMV the other day. They used to say that if you had, it was five vehicles, that if you mm-hmm. bought them, fixed them up, and sell them, up to five,
mm-hmm.
you're not considered a dealer.
Right.
You get to fix them there.
No, that's normal. Okay.
No, so if you're preparing for the purpose of sales, then you're
right.
a dealer.
Period.
Well, who doesn't buy a car? Yeah. That's silly. Who doesn't buy a car with the intent of someday selling it? You know,
is that the
but one in a year or is it one
per year?
Yeah.
One per year.
Right.
Wow.
And we just heard from a gentleman that's probably going. I think he has applied,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Bobo,
mm-hmm.
Did apply for a home occupation permit, and we can probably permit him. He doesn't put the cars on his site. He buys one at a time. He does about three a year,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to take advantage of our new.
Boy, is that really going to get in our economy where people are and our gas prices? And people are going to be getting rid of vehicles. If you have more than one vehicle, let's say you have four in your household, and you decide to get rid of two, now you have to have a license?
Well,
it's a technicality. I mean, you're not.
Yeah.
They can't enforce that.
Sure, I think if things been in your household for more than a year, Nancy,
yeah.
and you're going to sell two or three cars, I don't think you've been a problem. If they're seeing a car bought in February and,
okay.
and
yeah.
three cars bought in February and
yes.
three cars sold in June,
if you're insuring out of your personal insurance, you know,
Right.
I would think there's some distinction.
Never underestimate the power of bureaucracy.
Or the DMV.
Yeah. Okay, about your welding. And
welding fabrication should be commercial, should be exempt from this. Woodworking apprentice program, I put it in the category of exempt, but I haven't dealt with that issue, and
exempt or
prohibited, and what does that really entail?
I see a lot of people having home wood shops, and then if they're training someone to be a woodworker on their home shop tools, I don't see a problem with that. In fact, I see that being very low impact.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the sound.
The noise,
the sound, you know. And that's where we talked about that issue of what's at the property line, what could be heard at the property line. I mean, if you hear those buzz saws going and,
right.
you know, you're on a really small lot, it's not going to work.
Right.
But if you're on a really big lot, it's going to be fine.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if you only had one or two students, it wouldn't be a big problem. And if you had 20, it would be.
Right.
So,
is it a classroom or
well,
is it a...
So now if employees gets broadened to students,
apprenticeships,
mm-hmm. apprenticeships,
mm-hmm.
participants, whatever, and that we broaden that definition, then it kind of captures the number of trips that they're going to generate and their...
And you specifically used the term of apprenticeship, but usually apprentices are one or two at a time because you can only do so much hands-on. You know, it's not like the classroom woodshop. When you get to the apprenticeship, that's where it's one or two on one.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I did my
woodworking
class,
center.
We'd have the door open.
Are we talking like Grayback, or are we just talking about somebody on the phone who's dispatching vehicles from another property?
Yeah, I have not studied these.
The wildfire dispatch.
So I don't know if there's, you know, long distance, what is this radio called that...
Yeah, that's where Dave's issue about interference
mm-hmm.
becomes
mm-hmm.
a possible issue, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there radio controls they need for that interfering?
For a different frequency.
They are?
Yourself.
Okay.
But some of that dispatch could be the upfront dispatch of lining up who's going to the job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's not like Grayback where you have all the fire trucks, you know, fire trucks there and everybody,
mm-hmm.
you know, 30 guys are showing up and
right.
taking
I
off
the dispatch
property.
Center is truly communication.
That's the way I took it.
See, this could almost get into this, because I didn't see it on here, when you talk about dispatch centers, and I know a lot of them are doing it, the trucking dispatch.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, they do logistics.
Mm-hmm.
They find out where to go and everything else. They're working out of their homes. They're you know, making the phone calls.
And they don't make an impact on anything.
Yeah.
No. Man, people are just making phone calls. You know, why
right.
do they even bother with any of that?
Yeah, right.
You know,
But actually, I got a good answer to that question, and Dave hit this at one of our early meetings. It's because people think that there's a license, you have to get a business license, and they come to us. So we actually do want to capture that and know if they're doing business out of their home office. And that's why, like, when you talked about exempt, I go back to what I said at the last meeting. I really don't think anything should be exempt. You know, it's like for the very low impact, we want the type one, two-digit fee license because that's what people expect to pay to be in business.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how the county's aware that they are indeed in business. That's why they do that. So they can legitimize their business. They can get their EIN number. They can use their home address and receive mail at their home address.
Right.
And you know, and basically, hang, you know, they don't have to put up a sign, but it's basically hanging a sign on the door, and not a physical sign, but saying I'm in business,
right.
that I make my living this way.
Right. Hmm. Doesn't mean that exempt. Although there's no permit or review, that doesn't mean that we don't have a process that could capture a registration. You know, where they just are reporting that they are doing business
right.
out of their home.
But I feel if you're going to do there is a ministerial part of that, and it might just be a phone call. They fill out an online
right.
form, but because you've had to set up that form, there should be a small fee involved,
right.
so the county makes money.
I don't know if that's true because I internet sales. You got everybody and their mother is doing
mm-hmm.
eBay
mm-hmm.
and sales on those sites.
Okay.
We don't want let them do what they got to do. I mean, we need to stay
right.
out of the business and let them do it. So if you're trying to get a permit. Have them sign up to get a, you know, an NPF fee. I don't think that's correct. I mean, that needs to be a...
No, Rick, what you're talking about is kind of taking that goes there, and that goes there. So there is no exemptions, but a type 1 might be at the level where it's a $15 registration or something like that. You get a business license from the county, print one up on colored paper or something.
And I think there's a distinction. To me, what the exempt is the people that are basically doing 1099s, they still might get a Schedule C, but they don't call that their business. For the people that are using their home office and saying, this is how I make a living, that's, to me, that's the type 1 ministerial permit. So like someone selling something on eBay, that's just ancillary. Yeah, they're not the type of people that are going to call us up and say, do I need a business license for that? They're just going to do it anyhow. But it's the people that call us up and say, I want to start a bookkeeping service, or I want to start a dispatching business. You know, it's like nobody comes to my place. You know, they just call me, and then I call the trucking company, and I get my commissions on that, but that's how I make a living, and I want to be legitimate.
But we don't want to make people thinking they're doing something illegal and getting away with something either. We want to make sure that, you know, they're not, you know, saying, well, you know, I know that I'm supposed to get them, but I'm not going to call them. We want to say, well, you don't have to. It's just, I would think there is an exempt spot for those people. We should make it that way. But,
I look at, so the exempt spot then is ancillary part-time income, not full-time.
Avon.
Yeah, Avon,
and
Mary Kay.
And for any of these levels, especially with defining prohibited and exempt, those are the two categories. Those are the two ends of the bell curve.
Right.
Two ends of the bell curve where you need to be the most precise, and that's where we're going to spend a lot of time defining what that is.
Right.
Exactly. If you're no permit required, but you're still doing commercial activity of some sort, or you're beyond what we want to see and it's time to
go pay somebody to rent some commercial industrial property.
Right. Yeah. Those two ends of the spectrum, and I think we said that in the first meeting. Those are the most important ones to define.
That's important.
And the other ones, it's just a matter of kind of sorting this out, which process you fall into. So I took my mark off here, but just to illustrate what Rick was saying, I think what you're saying is nothing's exempt, everything's a type 1, but then we've got maybe some room for exemptions as well.
Okay. Erase that.
Any other thoughts on exemptions? Nancy, what did you have?
Did you get through your list?
The only thing that I had... And it would fall into any other businesses that are the phone type thing. An exempt would be one person, accounting, bookkeeping, they go get it elsewhere, bring it home.
Mm-hmm.
I could see, it's not that I don't want them registered, don't get me wrong, but I could see that they wouldn't be required to necessarily go through the other hoops of getting the site plans and so on and so forth. So any of the businesses that fall into that, the computer consultant could end up in that category depending on how they function their business.
Mm-hmm.
For example.
So basically one-person office, no outside storage, no...
No clients coming to the office.
Clients coming to the office, no employees.
Somebody in an office doing what they do.
Right.
Yeah. And there are a lot of those out there. And personally, I think one of our goals should be to get most of these home businesses under some form of where they're at, whether it's exempt 1, 2, or 3, and get them all registered. Even if we lean heavily towards the exempt, just register them for a minimal fee, but let them know these are the rules and you've got to do that. And I think it'll make everybody happier because I don't have to worry whether I'm in compliance or not. I now know.
But that makes them type 1. It's kind of the opposite of what Dave just did. That makes them type 1, just a very low impact type 1.
Right, right.
And then type 2 and 3 become what we have type 1 and 2.
Well, exemption can be written.
Yeah.
An exemption to me as a regulator means I don't write a permit.
Right.
You could be up to a particular threshold, or let's say below a particular threshold. I don't write a permit. I might charge you $10 or $15 for the determination that you don't need a permit.
I see. Okay.
You are an exempt.
Actually, that might be worth it, just throwing that in the definition.
Well, think about my people.
What people?
If you've never been on my level.
I love that. Matt, go ahead.
Who are your people?
Yeah.
You tell them, you know, all the people that are in violation and they're confused, they're not really, you know, maybe well-educated, you know, and they're going to see exempt and they're going to think, okay, I don't have to do anything. So it'll be confusing. To a lot of people, exempt means you don't have to do anything.
And that's correct.
My vote would be... We don't have that category, that if we're going to go that way and you know, move everything up and everybody has to register for, you know, if it's $10 or $20.
Okay.
And I guess that's a good idea. It makes them feel like they're legitimate.
Yeah.
I think we're still defining, because the line between casual economic activity and being a business is kind of a fine one.
Mm-hmm.
I take photographs for fun. If you wanted to come to my house and you saw one on the wall and you said, "Boy, I really like that. Can you make me one of those?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll do a print for you and I'll mat it and I'll frame it and I'll sell it to you for $100." Am I a business?
No.
Probably not really. Mm-hmm. I don't have a business license.
We have the flip side of that. We have people that rent out commercial spaces and we say you're really just a hobby. The fact you haven't made money in the last 10 years.
The IRS sees that if you don't show any kind of income within 3 years from the time you start your business, it's a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not making an income, you're just doing it to be got a business license and all that stuff for tax reasons, so you can write things off. If you don't do that for 3 years, they're gonna come back and audit you. So you're doing a hobby.
That could be about
90%
of events.
Yeah,
Georgia County
right now.
All those guys that see at the ski area with the contractor thing on the door? Yeah. Doesn't look like their car's been in the mud in about 5 years.
Yeah.
Do you think?
Well, I think kind of going with what Rick said and what Nathan said, is we just kind of like maybe the exempt is all of a sudden that persona of, oh, geez, I can get away with not having any kind of rulings on here, is that the classification is everybody falls in type 1. And then we start breaking down type 1 into type 2 and 3. So you have basic license like the city of Grants Pass, $50. I don't care, you know, you go over 3 employees and it goes to $75. So basically, if you want to be in business in the city, $50. You want to be in business in the county, $50.
Hmm.
Then you end up with both of them.
Well, that's what we have to.
No, you don't.
If you're in the city limits, you have a license.
City limits, I don't charge.
You have another one.
But if I come into the city for any reason to any one of my clients, I have to have a city license.
That's correct.
You are correct. Well, and you have to have one in Medford too, don't you?
Yeah, I've got one for Medford because.
But the other thing, I want to see less an intrusion on our freedoms and as our rights. And there you're stepping on a fine line with forcing people to sign up when they're not really, you know, when they're on eBay, selling some stuff on eBay and doing some stuff.
I think they don't qualify as a business. I mean,
Maybe we need to get away from exempt type 1 and say, what do we define as a business?
Well,
you know, I did $300,000 a year on eBay when I first started. I did a lot of business on there, but you wouldn't know I did it. I mean, you know, I sold hot rods and hot, you know, expensive cars, you know, but it doesn't mean I don't want to get a business license for it because it's just a hobby for me.
But you didn't impact your neighbors by doing
that. No, nobody impacted.
Did you have them parked on your property?
No. I went to their houses, I took pictures and, you know, put it on.
Yeah, right. And we're at a point, I mean, we talked at the last meeting, that there were, what was it, 78 people actually have these, and we know there's a lot more, so it's not like we're going to be making anyone illegal, and it's not like we have an enforcement. It's more the opposite.
I know. I feel bad. No.
But I think the point is that what we're trying to do is we're trying to make it easier for people to feel that they don't have to hide that they're doing business out of our home, that we have a very simple to me, that's the goal of this, is we have a very simple process where you can let us know what you're doing. We can let you know our concerns. This is where, you know, Nanette gets her chance to share, you know, fine, you can do this stuff at home, but you can't do this, 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 and this, because this is what really ticks off the neighbors and gets me the complaints and is going to get me coming to your house.
Well, for those businesses that start off, you know, perhaps as a below the threshold, kind of the $15 registration thing, and then they know sort of, you know, this is when it's time to, so you don't have a violation filed by your neighbors, this is when it's time to come back to the planning office and bump up to that next level, and yeah, you got to pay an extra fee, but at that point you're legit again, you know, for the expansion of the business.
Can I make a suggestion on the renewal part? Because at the time that you guys, we talked this year, I didn't even have a clue I was out of my bounds.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something in the renewal process that you can state or attach to, this is what you're signed up for?
Yeah, when we make a decision of approval, we have what are called the conditions of development or the conditions of approval. And those are what you are held to. That's what we are signing off on. So that gives you that's what gives you your limits on how many employees you can approve for.
Or ask if things have changed.
And where would you
employees?
Where we make the phone call is we have a questionnaire that goes out.
Yeah.
There's a big discrepancy between what you have on the questionnaire and what you're looking for.
There's a statement at the bottom about if you have any changes, you have to contact the planning office.
Unfortunately, right now.
Yeah. We
change
that.
And I'm sure that process is going to change once this process changes, right?
It'll change somewhat, and I think where it changes is because once people are, you know, if we permit them as a type 1, let's say, and they've reached that threshold, they, you know, like Valerie said, you've got your conditions of approval, you get 2 employees, you've got, you know, 8 deliveries a week, you've got, you know, whatever our parameters are on those conditions of approval, and then we get the questionnaire back, and they've clearly gone over that. We have an excavation guy that went from like 3 vehicles to 8 or something like that, and we get that and go, wow, you know, okay, now it's time to give him a call. But I think at that time, right now, the way the system's set up, you get a whole new permit.
Yes.
Not the way to do it, in my opinion. I think at that time, we acknowledge you are an existing permit, and when you want to bump levels, then we want to make that less, probably even less of a charge. Let's say we've got when you go from a type 2 or type 1 to a type 2, so we've got the what are we going to call it? Type 1, let's say, is a 2-digit permit. That's a $65 permit. And now we're going to go to a type 2 permit, and that's a $400 permit or something. At that point, I think, wouldn't even be a bad idea that if you're a brand new user, we've never saw you before, you get the full fee. If you're going to bump up a level, we subtract the fee you already paid, and you pay the difference. And we've already seen you.
Well, for the 78 people that paid 4 digits already, you know, crediting them if a new process comes out for those 4 digits they've already paid.
They would probably get money back.
I don't think that's going to happen in just a few minutes. That's just my editorial opinion.
Sorry. Be quiet.
Well, those 78 are probably the ones that came in and paid the $325, then the $2,000, and then went through the planning review and paid another $2,000, so they got a $4,000 investment. Yeah, we probably owe money back, but they're the ones that follow the rules.
Yes. Do you want to punish them?
So we reward them into the future. We may not refund them, but we thank them a lot.
If you've got a vested permit, you've got a vested
really
permit.
Special person.
But the instance that we have right now is that most of those people, when we do have to make the phone call to them, it's because they've gone, you know, well beyond.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, frankly, you know, somebody comes in and they used to store, you know, 2 vehicles on their site, and now they've got a 3rd one. Am I going to make them go through the process again? Probably not. If he added 4 or 5 vehicles on a half-acre parcel or 1-acre parcel, yeah, probably will. or advise them, hey, look, you're out of bounds, and it's time to either go to a commercial site, maybe that's where your business is headed. Sometimes we ask them questions like, how fast are you growing? Have you just now put down those extra three vehicles, but you've had, you know, you went from three back in 1996, then you had four in 2001, then you had five in 2007, and then you had the sixth one in 2011? Was it that kind of growth? Or are you growing so fast that you're gonna outgrow your parcel really quick?
What do you want Nan to say to them? You know, at what point do you start thinking about your neighbors and the impact?
Well, I start them with Nan all the time. Sure.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And tell me to quit making people cry.
You know, oftentimes, you know, really in the initial contact we have with people in home occupations and I find that first 20-minute sit-down with somebody or a half hour is worth a heck of a lot of, you know, resolving heartbreaks to come, both for them and for us. Just kind of sit down and say, okay, these are your plans right now. Now, where do you want to be in 5 years from now? How big would you really realistically envision yourself being? Is this something that's going to grow and grow and grow, or are you retired and you don't want to be any bigger than that? And so we have those kind of discussions with them. And, you know, I'd highly recommend anybody that comes into the home occupation, let's go step in the conference room and lay out what your plans are and how big is your site and where are your neighbors and what kind of buildings do you have on site and that kind of stuff. So we have those kind of conversations with them. I think having a typing process laid out in front of us in an ordinance, I could say, look, if you're telling me in 10 years you want to be here, start planning for it now. Sort of get yourself a strategy for what that, you know, 10-year time frame is going
to
look like.
And it doesn't have to be real specific in the conditions. We don't have to just tie you in and say you're going to have two employees. We can say at type one, you can't have more than two, and anything over two and at a maximum of five, because do you really want more than five employees in a home occupation? You know, so from two over two to five, you're good at your level, and you can have that fluctuate, you know.
Right.
It doesn't hurt to do it that way at all. And it allows for some flex in people's plans.
What happens, and we've got a business that's sitting that was in the county, and now they're in urban growth in the city, that went from a one-person, two-person home occupation to a crew of 25 people in local trucks and everything else.
We call Nan.
they're in urban growth. They're in the city Grand Pass.
Yeah, we don't call Nan.
But this is a situation where they were in the county, and mm-hmm. up till 2-3 years ago, when they annexed or urban growth out to Lawton Road off of New Hope, and now he's in the city. But his business is also, what you were just saying, he's went from a 2, 3 to 4 to 25 people.
Well, we have a maximum for home occupations is 5.
Yeah,
well, that's current.
And that's
so,
it. And at that point, though, that business, if you had the resources to grow that much, you should have the resources to move into a commercial space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, I mean, I'm an advocate for small business, and you know that, but there's a certain point where you don't do this out of your home. You have to invest in commercial space, because we do have to think about your neighbors, and that's mm-hmm. the unfortunate part that Nanette's dealing with, and I feel we should be supporting Nanette in those dealings and saying, you know, at what point,
mm-hmm.
you know, are you just trying to avoid expenses that any normal business
overhead.
Should have?
Yeah.
The overhead, right. Exactly right.
Yes, yeah, so did we get to your list on exemptions or prohibited?
Yes.
Did we get to your list, both pages?
Yeah, because I have, really, I don't have much in the prohibited except for welding and automotive type stuff where noise is a factor.
Okay.
And then I questioned, and maybe Valerie, this is a question for you, but maybe it's sitting now. The fireworks display that's out there by Justin Growers, or the co-op.
Mm-hmm.
Do they are they into where they have to have a home occupation permit?
I want to say there's an UGB, but I'm not sure. I think
I'm thinking it is now that I said that. Because
pretty sure that's UGB.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's getting so dang close, I don't want to hear it. Thank you.
I don't even know. Fireworks are legal in Oregon?
a certain
type.
Yeah.
You want to get the good ones? Go to an Indian reservation.
Question
of Washington. That's right.
Yeah.
They're one of the largest volume fireworks stands in the entire country. Is in Vancouver, Washington.
Yep.
Really?
It's right off the highway before you get between 99th and 134th Street. It's called Black Cat or Black Jack. It's in a yellow building. It's right next to I-5.
The one that burned down 3 years ago.
That's the fire that I saw. Yeah. Just incredible.
I don't remember seeing the fireworks stand along.
Yeah.
If you go up through Hood Canal up toward the Olympics, all those.
Yep.
Fireworks are a big deal around here.
Yep.
It's kind of ironic.
So, David and Ward, maybe get through your lists and ship them to us, scan them, and email them, or...
Valerie
can go through all this.
Out there trying to check things off before we begin.
One way of looking at it, too, is to kind of group different ideas, like, you know, in general, retail sales. Should that be something that's in a neighborhood? Wildlife sanctuary. There's a lot of differences there between someone who has an owl and a raccoon or a tiger. You know, so I mean, there's different extremes, but there's something that you can group together and kind of say, in general, retail sales, maybe not.
Mm-hmm. We have a gentleman that owns exotic animals. We have several of them actually in the county, but one of them in particular that started up, and he's actually in a commercial zone, but he started the business, put up the signs, come pet the tiger, that kind of thing, and this is just about the time that the situation in, was it Ohio, Pennsylvania?
Gentlemen
let all his animals loose. And you know, Nat and I were kind of freaking about that. So that was one of the issues that we brought to the commissioners that actually got us moving on this. We need to start addressing enforcement offices. It's the permit for the animals itself, but they don't regulate how many people come onto the property, how close they get to the animals. That's just to have a tiger. Here's a permit. I have a gentleman and lived down the road from me when I was growing up that had a cheetah. Got out one time, he had to chase it in the car.
And then what?
It's not like that GMB thing where they do make you sign off on it.
Right.
Time to request that.
Actually, there are quite a few state type of permits that do require local land use approval. We have $125 review that's called a land use compatibility statement, and basically we're looking at whatever they're proposing and letting the state know that either as they are proposing it, we don't have any issues, we're not involved on the land use level, or it may be that they're required to go through review or permit. So they want to know that they are meeting their local requirements before they actually issue a permit.
Right.
And we get them from DEQ, DMV,
OLCC,
DSL, and Army Corps have one for any type of work that you would do in wetlands or in-stream work.
DSL's Division of State Lands, for those of you that don't know.
Thank you.
A lot of acronyms. So anyway, yeah, if we can collect those from the rest of you, and then Valerie will put those together. And I think I'd like to approach this typing exercise and the summation in two ways. We'll fill out this chart, put the appropriate number of X's in each box, and again, if you go across and think that it belongs in more than one, that's fine. You can vote more than once. You could do it all the way across if you think that's a possibility. And then I think Valerie and I will take those and kind of group them by general categories. Here's the office uses, here's the manufacturing uses, here's the repair uses. We can come up with some general groupings, I think, on these, and then see where things fall out compared to this list. And kind of build a matrix that way. Before we get too late, I wanted to... any more on typing? I'd like to get to Nanette's first feature film, which is a code compliance issues. And I'm going to get another glass of water, and then I think we can
Okay. I think we can turn off half the lights.
Half the lights. Light. That one back there, at least.
This one right here?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then that, if you want to take them through this.
Okay.
And you see, Dave?
You might need to get in front of you.
No, you're fine. You let Nancy do this.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Put it up.
Put it on top of this.
You wanted speakers, right?
Okay.
You need a water bottle.
Oh, please let it in.
Let's see. Do you want to put it up a little bit, Nan?
Is everybody seeing that? You see that? I kind of have to see it. I didn't want it on automatic.
I don't know where that cord's going to. Is that you?
Yeah, it's just under here.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So, occupations. I had to call it something, and I kind of like, you know, the Western thing. So we'll go ahead and go through here. So, you can read, the purpose of the Home Occupation Code is to ensure that home occupations conducted on residentially developed properties are compatible with the neighborhood in which they are located and maintain the character and appearance of both the use and the neighborhood. I think, you know, that's what the code says, that's what we're... Okay, permitted home occupations, the good. And this is, I took a little photo of when they get their development permit. And it states, you know, home occupation on there. Many of our home occupations, of course, we have, you know, 78, I think. But many of them, you know, abide by their conditions and their standards. So we don't have a problem. This is one that's an excavation. And, you know, looking at their property there, you can't see anything. There's no sign. There's not a bunch of... Get up, there's no noise. You're not seeing equipment. You know, so it could be just be an office. I think you'd be allowed to have two pieces of equipment stored. Really low impact to the neighborhood. It's a little cabinet shop. And, you know, driving by, you'd never know it. Here's driving by the road. The little cabinet shop is way in the back here, very low impact. And this is a bakery. And this is out in Williams. And here's the little bakery right there, right there. And you would never know that by going by. You know, very, very low impact. Dog grooming and border. If I put a lot of photos on there, then you really can't see them very well. But in the back here, they have like an outdoor little kennel for the kids, for the dog, for the kids, little kids, the free kids to go out and. But there's not a lot going on. I go by down that road quite a bit, and it's.
How many dogs in that kennel?
Currently in this kennel,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I haven't ever actually been in there.
Well,
Mr. Rambai,
I'll comment about kennel factor.
Yeah, because they have a limitation in what they have.
And those other two, I mean, the excavation one, there's a little sign on his driveway that said excavation, correct?
No, I think that was an address.
No, well, it's just an address.
It was the house number.
Is this the only one that you're showing that actually had signage? Did the cabinet shop have any kind of signage?
No, this was the first one with the sign.
And the bakery didn't have any signage?
No.
Okay.
No, this was the first one. And it's in compliance, and it's doing well. And then we have the not so good, the ones that are permitted, but they don't stay in compliance. We got a bed and breakfast that decided to expand beyond the permitted use and had a lot of complaints, big issues. You know, gatherings out there now to
the
where...
The tree thing?
Mm-hmm. It's a bed and breakfast in Kansas County.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've
so it's a big impact.
18 in existence. Okay.
Yeah. And a stage and zip lines and, you know, 4th of July gatherings. So it's having a huge impact on the neighbors.
That's more than bed and breakfast.
Yeah.
That looks like a fun place to go.
Interestingly enough, we have another treehouse bed and breakfast who's fully in compliance with their permits.
Yes.
Everything's fine. Never had a complaint.
Yeah.
Not one.
I didn't even know it was out there until, you know, this other one came. I'm like, wow, there's another one out there? I mean, they're just perfect. Okay, so vehicle repair businesses don't always adhere to the standards, and they do end up creating some significant sound impacts. And here's one of them, and it's on a very busy road, and you can see, you know, they're only supposed to have two vehicles stored, and you can see all the vehicles, and then they even have equipment out there, so they probably work out there, and there's probably more noise than what was, you know, allowed.
It looks like a commercial business.
Yeah, what's the definition of stored? How many hours?
And there's no hours.
So when we say a car stored.
Parked or stored outside.
For how long? If they're working on it, is the definition
if it's
stored?
It's the number
hours
of cars.
If it's a vehicle,
yeah,
it's one.
Period. It's one.
We don't regulate the hours, how many hours.
We don't have
there.
Any
well, you guys have four
that.
Vehicles out there, and let's say they're being turned fast enough. I mean, I guess the question is, okay, you've got four vehicles there that are there for a week, but you come by the next week, and there's only two. I mean, what's the definition?
He was still out of compliance for that
well,
time.
Yeah. Whenever he has more than two, he's out of compliance.
Out of compliance, okay.
Yeah. And
regardless of how long they're sitting there.
Right.
Okay.
So, here's another one off a busy road, and I don't have a wide angle. I couldn't go far enough, but over here and over here, there's camper shells and then a little part of some sort of truck, and then up here, you can't really see it. I mean, I wish we had a big screen, but there's several. There's several cars up in here, and that's what a lot of them do. Here's another one on a very busy highway. And over here, kind of slightly out of the picture, some old ones that looks like maybe he's going to restore them. Same over here, some old auto body ones and a few other cars stored out in front. So, and this is on a good day because I go by there a lot and sometimes he has more. So, this one is especially auto restoration place. This is one I have had complaints on. This is the home. This right here was the shop, and then he got permitted to have an oversized accessory building. And so he's got like a 6,500 square foot shop there. And in the back, out of the picture here, he's got a fenced-in area. They're not supposed to have any outside storage. He had it filled with stored parts, and he actually added another little structure and started doing sandblasting, and he had employees, and so he was way out of compliance. So I've been working with him to bring him back into compliance.
Right, but that's where you get into the scary areas. You said you permitted it, or someone permitted a 6,500 square foot building. At what point do you say, hey, how big are you getting at 6,500 square foot that these things aren't going to happen?
Well, in planning...
I just
planning
a pole barn on my property.
What's that?
I just want a pole barn on my property.
Oh, that's what they
he was just going to store his
permit.
Cars in here. That's
some extra storage, and then the business morphs in.
Right. When they come in and they apply, it kind of is told to planning as one thing. I need this because I have all these great cars and I'm storing them in there. And he actually had a commercial site at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, times are hard. Save money. I got the space. So he moved his commercial business to his property.
We can only do so much to prevent things from going awry. So we can put on that permit your oversized accessory structure is for personal use. No commercial use is being approved for it. We can't say you can't have that. We know what you're up to.
We think you're going to do this.
So now the resolution, I mean, this person, you know, have to give the details, was talked. I mean, is it coming to a good resolution or is it getting ugly?
Oh, no. I've gotten pretty much resolved. He did build a gate that he refuses to get a permit for. It's a 7-foot
big date
so
his neighbor can. Well, not here. He's got a feud going with the neighbors, you know. And, you know, he was shining a big old spotlight in their bedroom window, you know, every night. I mean, it was ugly. So got that all resolved. Everything's resolved except for the gate he needs to get a permit for, but that's kind of low priority.
Right here, Nancy. Yeah.
I have enough headaches, thank you.
I got out of planning in 1989 for a reason.
You're just reminding me why.
Yeah, so moving on. Okay, and then there are the unpermitted. But we want their business. We want them to get permitted. Ornamental concrete sales. He has a sign outside right on his driveway, and then he wanted to make sure and put a sign out there on Upper River Road and Pinecrest there. So he's, you know, really advertising. Here's another auto repair. I actually went and I talked to him, and he's basically shut down. You know, he already has, but the complaint was already there. This is very unsightly, mini storage. So he's getting, that's what he's working on right now. His paint booth is shut down. He's not bringing anybody in, anybody's vehicles, and charging them. These are mostly his. The ones that aren't his, he's going to get removed from his property. And the ones that are his, he's either going to get them licensed or he's going to store them at another friend's inside a big shop he's got. And this shop right here is filled with, you know, collectible kind of cars and different, you know, stages of repair. So, but his neighbors don't enjoy that. And this is a little birdhouse, you know. This guy's selling birdhouses, and he's got, you know, signs out there, you know. So he's really inviting the public in. Come in, you know, that could be a... That's a traffic problem. You see, there's no real parking along here. He doesn't, you know, he
probably. What road is he on there?
Pardon?
What road is he on?
This is on Azalea.
Okay.
Yeah.
I passed that the other day.
Okay, yeah, that's where it's at.
Okay. Yeah. And these little ones pop up. There's another one here. This is a gal that sells jewelry. This is on Monument. Mm-hmm. And she's got all her balloons and signs, and people come
is
in and selling jewelry.
And Rome Galice Road?
Mm hmm.
Yeah, it's not Monument, right?
Oh, I'm sorry, Merlin Galice.
Yeah, that's
right.
I saw that the other day.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know. And this is what we're talking about. This is water service. He's got, you know, all these trucks. He's got, there's three of them right here in the picture, but he's got four.
Yeah, he got a lot of stuff back there.
Yeah, he does.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So. So anyways, he was contracting with forestry, you know, take a water truck out there. And I said, well, you can't possibly drive four at one time. Oh, no, I'm selling them. So he's supposedly in the process of selling.
He is
burning,
I know. But
yeah.
Nothing's worth nothing right now.
Is that like a four-bay garage he's got in the back
there?
Oh, it's a big shop, yes.
Yeah. So, again, that would have been, he was permitted to put that in, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And it's packed. You can't step in that shop.
Yeah, so. Actually, this one came to me because they had a closed medical hardship, and I had to work with them to get the mobile home off or permitted, and then it led to this. It was like, hey, wait a minute. What do you got going out here? So, yeah. And this is a kennel, you know, out off Redwood Highway. You know, like you're going to O'Brien. And, you know, he's been there for years. Has a bunch of German Shepherds have actually been back there. And you can't get out of your car because there's like three or four Shepherds just running all around, barking at you, wanting to bite you. So, and this is a landscaping supply.
So that keeps man away, too.
Oh, I've got
some German Shepherds.
I got froggy biscuits in my car. I ride this wolf blend dog all the way. I had to get to blend. He was a wolf mix.
Hybrid, yeah.
Well, whatever. Here's what I could tell his wolf. His head was about this big. And so I'm like, huh, I got to get to that front door. you know, how am I going to get this letter to that front door with that dog there? And there was nobody home. So I'm like, hey, you know, want a cookie? Yeah. So I'm in my Jeep and I'm eating cookies out the window and now he's wagging. I'm thinking, oh, he's not so bad. So I start slowly getting out of my Jeep and I'm feeding, I got the bag of cookies and I set them all the way to the door and all the way back. So,
yeah, or he's planning to those people and small children.
Yeah. Okay, so we have landscaping supply and, you know, I know it's, you know, some of them are permitted, but I think it's, you know, in a residential, I guess it would really depend on the property, you know.
Yeah, that's a good question to bring up. What about Renee? Who's out off of New Hope, you know, in Mountain View? Mm-hmm. He's got and nursery there too.
Mm-hmm.
Is he far enough off the road that penny's worth doesn't affect anybody?
I wouldn't think so. And to me, out there, a nursery kind of fits in.
I mean, you know, he's got houses all around him. I mean, and his house is in the river, but I mean, that's a good question to ask.
Yeah, but this one is off Pleasant Valley.
But some places are, you know, there's residential houses around them, but it's still zoned commercial.
These are ones that aren't commercial.
Farm,
yeah.
That one's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, I got a complaint on this one. This gal decided she was just going to have a permanent yard sale. And she had, and it was very narrow roads, and she had signs all up and down the road, and the neighbors were going crazy because of the traffic jams and the unsafe, you know, cars pulling out from this. And then I discovered that she over here got one of those metal shipping containers that were converted, and she was setting up a little store right there on the property. So got that kind of shut down, although she hasn't gotten permits for that yet. But
one of the initial reactions we had from folks to the draft home occupations ordinance that I gave you, and I pulled that from another jurisdiction, was a pretty vociferous reaction to garage sales. What do you mean you're going to regulate garage sales?
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. At a certain point, you're not at a garage sale anymore. If you're
ongoing sale.
If it's not coming out of your garage, it's coming from other people's garages. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that fits our classic definition of a garage sale, if you're having one every weekend for 45 weekends out of the year. When are you secondhand sales?
Yeah.
That was one of the kind of the touchy issues that the commissioners heard about when we first talked about home occupation ordinance.
I strongly recommend that we do clarify that language like we discussed at the last meeting. You know, a certain amount of times per year, that's it.
So the list of unpermitted home occupations in Josephine County could go on and on. Into the sunset. Mm-hmm. Wow. That was 2 seconds.
Western theme.
Dramatic.
So hopefully this revised home occupation code along with public education, and that's something I'd like to strongly remind everybody, because if the public doesn't know about it, it's not going to do us a darn bit of good. We'll encourage more home-based businesses while bringing the existing ones that are in violation into compliance. So I think as word gets out and they hear, oh, it's not so bad, it's not so expensive, I'd rather not have to keep looking over my shoulder or wondering if, you know, the neighbor's going to turn me in. I'll go ahead and sign up. I'm hoping that that's how it will start.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
But the other equation to this right now is that we are in probably some of the worst economic times that we've ever been faced with. And what, you know, how do we be lenient now to, you know, to these people without, you know, it's a tough go right now.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And well, we haven't seen nothing. I mean, well, we're at the verge of a complete meltdown.
And the question we're going to get, which is going to happen, you know, when June comes around anyhow, is, yeah, you want to raise the taxes, property tax, and everything else. You want me to have a business occupation permit. What do I get out of it? What is the return? You know, I'm going to get a safer community. I'm going to get better compliance. What is in it for me? I'm in compliance, but you got three. Walking in here today, you asked me what kind of business I am, and it's $325 to file. And oh, by the way, depending on where it falls, you may have to come up with another $2,000, and if it doesn't fall within that category, you have to have a punishment if none of these grants. I'm going to turn around and walk back out because you're not doing anything for me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You're except for getting into my pocketbook.
Right.
So what, like he's saying, with hard time and everything else, the question we're going to fight is it going to make Gillespie County better? Is it going to bring more businesses here? Is it going to make my economic picture prettier? That's a tough one. I mean, right now, we're going to fight. Who wants to move Gillespie County? Who wants to keep their business here when we have, we're going to lose police and all the county services and everything else? I mean, I was in Curry County this weekend and all the counties up and down the coast, and I tell you what, it's scary when you look and you don't see any police around and you see closed business after closed business, and you're going, is that Gillespie County next? So right. The question is going to be is, what is it going to do for me to be a business right. owner here by paying you a fee?
Yeah. But and on the other hand, is the flip side of the question. As a homeowner, I bought my property. This is the biggest investment I've ever made.
Right.
And why do I have a guy next door to me, you know, banging on fenders all day? So,
property.
You guys jumped
into
a tough one because it's that balancing act. And I guess I
don't see that. I mean, we already have a process that's just not being complied with because it's too onerous. What we're doing is we're establishing something that's going to make it easy and
right.
hopefully
right.
better defined.
Right.
So I think that's what's in it, is we're making it really easy where you could do your business out of your home,
yeah.
but with the understanding that if you're going to do your business out of home instead of a commercial space, you have to think about your neighbors. You have to think about your property values.
Stay within the parameters.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that part of this, the sell of this as well, is that, let's face it, folks, you know, getting permits, whether it's the state, whether it's paying your taxes, whether it's getting insurance, whether it's, you know, all the things that you have to comply with to go into business, that's all part of your business plan. Well, getting your permit and getting along with your neighbors, whether it be on a commercial industrial site even,
oh, yeah.
or on a home business site, that's part of your business plan. So I, you know, I'm sort of counting on you guys in the Small Business Development Center to tell folks, you know, accounting for permits, accounting for growth, accounting for the change in your circumstances, that's part of your 1 year, 5 year, 10 year business plan. Getting your permits is just part of that. But I think that your primary task is to work on an ordinance here. But I think that to go beyond that and take that to the next level, there is nothing wrong with it. I would encourage you to make recommendations to the Planning Commission or to the Board of Commissioners for this group to say, we need to start recognizing small businesses. We need to raise the profile, so to speak, of businesses in Gillespie County. One of the ones that we've discovered, haven't had a complaint, he falls into one of the categories you don't like, but it's pretty darn impressive. It's the guy that that builds classic Porsche race cars.
Oh, yeah.
They're nice.
Yeah, really nice.
That's the kind of business that you want to tout as a county, I think. Whether that's appropriate in a home, and maybe on his particular parcel, we haven't had any complaints. He's doing something right.
Yeah.
He's probably doing it all inside.
Yeah, it is.
He's not taking a Porsche 960 outside and turning it over.
Right.
Or if he's doing it inside, he's got sound baffling or something. But so I would encourage you at the end of this process to think about what kind of recommendations do we want to send on to the Planning Commission or the Board. To sort of, now that we've got a process, now that we know we've defined businesses as opposed to hobbies, mm-hmm. we don't want to scare off those people that want to sell stuff on eBay themselves, and I don't want a flood of people coming in here thinking they're a business when they're really not. And then defining and assuring property owners where those parameters are going to be, make it predictable, make it affordable. But at the same time, where do we take it beyond that? Do we highlight all the businesses on the county websites so people can quickly access them? There's a link to their websites. Is that part of a newsletter that we put out? Is the county sponsor an ad in the Daily Courier once a week that says Gillespie County's highlighted business of the month, business of the week? Those kind of things, I think, are more of a community strategy that's tied to this kind of work, but goes beyond it.
If we take a look at this, and I think the first meeting we had, we kind of talked the strategy, how do we roll this out? I mean, obviously, we got all this other stuff we got to work out first, but we also got to think, okay, once we have implemented all this thing, and it's got the blessing on us, how do we roll it out? How do we tell people, oh, by the way, do we do mass mailing to all the businesses that we know of, or to every residential person, or to the courier? Basically, you know, we're only talking 16,000 out of the 70,000 people that are in the county that would even get the paper. But how do we say, okay, guys, we got this new real clean meal deal that's going to help you, can be right. In compliance. How do we tell those people that aren't in compliance?
Yeah.
We don't kind of have her to go out and drive around every street and alleyway in the county and
put a flyer on a mailbox.
Well, we can ask.
We'll put a banner on your Jeep.
We decided that we were going to have David be in charge of getting the word out. Wasn't that it?
Something like that. Actually, you know, let's see how this shakes out first, then we could talk about the rollout.
You're going to see how much they like it.
Actually, no. It's one of those things. Is this going to become an easy sell or a hard sell? The way we're talking informally at this table right now, again, I see this being an easy sale. If we're talking about a two-digit type 1, a three-digit type 2, to me, that's a real easy sell compared to what we already have, and the rollout of this is very easy. Now, how this morphs by the time it comes from our committee and goes to the county commissioners and gets approved, then it might become a hard sell. I mean, we don't know that.
The outcome of the subcommittee is a recommended ordinance and probably a policy statement that backs that up, that sort of explains, here's our intent, here's what we went through, here's the issues that we looked at. That's the staff report that I write to the Planning Commission,
okay.
Valerie and I write to the Planning Commission, and includes your recommended ordinance. Then it goes to the Planning Commission in public hearing. Planning Commission, when they adopt something that is, when they hold a hearing on an issue that is not in resource land and doesn't involve a goal exception to the state land use goals, the Planning Commission has the final decision, makes findings, and passes on a recommended ordinance to the board. The board at that point either adopts it, rejects it, or makes minor changes.
Okay.
They could say, we've heard this, we've read it, we've had our first reading, we've taken public comment in Planning Commission, we felt you missed a few things, we're going to send it back to you. They could do that. But
they can't rewrite it.
It's not a de novo hearing, whole new ball of wax. The Planning Commission, per the code, has the decision and the findings on these issues.
So it behooves us to make this as simplistic as possible, putting it all together as a sales tool, like Rick was saying. It's, right now, between us, it's easy to sell. It's easy to sell. It's to keep that momentum going to sell it to them, because they're going to sell it to commissioners, make it as smooth sailing as possible.
Yeah.
And once an ordinance passes, I wrote a news release the other day for the $2,000 fee waiver. A week ago, gave it to a county commissioner who really wanted to see it, and that was what he wanted to tell. No traction at all. Haven't heard. Not going anywhere.
That's ridiculous.
And, you know, that is, momentum is, or lack thereof, is one of the issues we've got. And Ward's seen it, I know, I have a sense of urgency about this ordinance, and that's one reason that I wanted to get us on a fast track. Every 3 weeks we hit it, and I want an ordinance in front of the Planning Commission by the 1st of April.
Yeah.
I
think you left us with really good draft work to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty close.
Yeah. So
we provided our input.
What I'd like to see, I think with those definitions, that's really what we're going to hit you with next time. And I would encourage, we're going to talk about fees a little bit, but while we're talking about process, if we can get the feedback on the typing exercise, Valerie and I were thinking that we would go to 4 weeks to the next meeting rather than 3 weeks. It gives us time to assimilate the typing exercise, get the comments from Ward and David, put those into some groupings that make sense. look at our draft ordinance, refine that a little bit, and next time we come to you with what we've been able to gather from this group thus far for some refinements at that meeting, and then we'll probably add a draft ordinance beyond that, but that goes to the planning commission. That would be my goal.
So the 4 weeks of today's
Nancy's tax season is driving me to get all this done.
I'm going to have
pretty quickly.
Reschedule
the
appointment, but I'll make it.
But
can
we just have the things first?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, 21st.
March.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
21st,
March
21st.
Yeah.
Same time,
6 o'clock.
Yeah.
One thing that we're going to have some homework for you again. One thing that I'm going to probably go through and vet before I send it to you, but I want to make you aware of it. Ward's probably seen this before in the Planning Commission. These are cases from LUBA, Land Use Board of Appeals, regarding home occupations. Believe it or not, they are a regulated land use in the state of Oregon. These are cases that went all the way to the Land Use Board of Appeals. After the Board of Commissioners made decisions, people appealed them. And I think to give you a flavor for what some of the issues are, not to overwhelm you, David's smiling, but to give you a flavor for the breadth of issues that come up in some of these hearings. Now, some of these are procedural things that counties and cities have made, mistakes that they've made that have been appealed to LUBA. Other ones are the circumstances of cases that are pretty interesting. But I'm going to scan this and I'll email it to all of you. And if you just want to read through it to see what are the land use courts dealing with, LUBA is the Land Use Board of Appeals. That's the local, that's the state board in the state of Oregon that hears land use cases.
Yeah, they sure do.
And so you don't go to court, you go to Land Use Board of Appeals in the state of Oregon.
Yeah, there's like four attorneys.
These are interesting, and I have five pages of them. This is off a website called LUBA Headnotes. So this is just a quick summary of the case. But I'll send those out to folks. They'll find it interesting reading. So, and I'll probably go through a few if they're ones that just don't make any sense or they're purely bureaucratic.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll pull them off the list, but I'll go through that list and then send them to you. Mallory, you did some of the research on fees, right? Or was that Debbie?
That was Debbie.
Okay.
I didn't do that.
Did you send Debbie here? Do you have extra copies?
I do have extra copies.
Okay.
I think it looks like everyone had it.
We talked in general about sort of a two-digit, three-digit, four-digit number. But for background, I wanted to give you this information. These are planning fee comparisons that we did last year in other Oregon counties.
And I'm the only one that's got marked on it.
Can someone make notes?
Then not supposed to write on mine?
You can write on whatever.
No, it's a bad idea.
I go back to, I'm thinking already ahead for the easy sell. I think we keep it simple. You know, type 1, $50. Type 2, you know, $200. That's it. I don't care what anyone else is charging. I want to be a trailblazer on this. Let's keep it simple. And then anything outside type 2, that anything that's going to cost more than $200, it's case by case. It's a conditional use permit. It's whatever it costs to do that conditional use, and that goes outside of this group.
One thing I noticed on here that a few of them did, they didn't have any renewals.
Yeah, they did.
No, there were
$51 renewal fee, $150, $276 for 2 years.
Well, Benton, no renewal fee.
Right.
No,
some of them don't.
That's what I'm saying. Some of them don't have some of them don't. And how do they keep track of if they go out of their boundaries? If they
might be more active in the field. They might do site visits.
What do you charge now for a renewal?
$125.
Yeah, and that, you know, most I'm going by other states. I've lived in most states have a 2-year process. The website should be up for 2 years.
And
then there's you get the renewal of the license. That's something that you would probably comment best on, and how often can you do this?
I like the year so that if they grow too big and they have too many impacts and the neighbors are too inhibited to, you know, scared to complain, at least we're kind of getting a little heads up. And we found a few that actually, I didn't have any employees, now I've got 8 employees, and I have a, you know.
Okay. So, in thinking about how to make these distinctions again, and where whether this is a 1 and this is a 2, somehow those are combined, somehow these are combined, we're not entirely there yet, I think. Type 1, Rick, you threw out
$50. $50 first.
And there's no exemption in your...
the exemption...
There's a threshold by which you're not a business.
Right. The exemptions are no fee. Or if I think someone mentioned like a $10 to, you know, to be told you're exempt.
Okay. Checklist we look at.
Yeah.
You know, but we're not a business. We don't charge for stuff like that. I would have a hard time for exemptions.
Even with the old code, we would go over the definition with anyone who came to the counter,
mm-hmm.
and if they were able to say, I don't do that, I don't do that, I'm doing this, I don't have a sign, blah, 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 we would say, you have nothing to do here.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a gentleman that came in, and I told him, you're a hobby.
Yeah.
Yep.
I heard a comment about site review. At what point do you guys do the site review? If we're going to stay type 1,
see,
now our type 2...
Where I balk, what is that the right word?
Balk,
mm-hmm. Balk. Where I hesitate is to assign a price to a type without knowing. I think by defining your types and what you are looking at and kind of getting an idea of how much review is actually going to be involved, because this isn't just a matter of making, we want it to be friendly, we want it to be easy, we want it to be cost effective. However, there's a real cost involved here too. We are a county agency with employees that are paid to do this work. So there has to be some...
We need to talk about that.
There has to be some balance between the work
right.
that is put in by the planning office and there needs to be balance between what the applicant pays and the work that goes into this application
right.
by
right.
the planner.
Right.
And Dave talked about this at the last meeting. So the type 1 is something that could just be a checklist, and someone in your office is going over the checklist, you meet all the compliance in that, that's the $50. The type 2, there's going to be a more in-depth level of review from your office.
Remember again, when we first talked about ministerial clauses, mm-hmm. that's a bunch of the department right there. You either meet the standard or you don't. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time going through criteria. I'm not going to look at any criteria. I'm going to say, you're less than X number of employees. You're less than X number of customers. You aren't exempt because you're above that threshold, but you're below this other threshold. And we're just going to go check, 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 check. You're type 1.
You're
$50.
Right.
You're out of here. Here's a permit.
Now,
we issue the permit, and maybe the conditions are very standardized. There's nothing fancy. We're not making anything up. That's the primary distinction between a ministerial and a quasi-judicial. Ministerial may have conditions, but they're standardized and they're objective too. Bauer and I don't make them up. But when you go to a quasi-judicial, then we're making a customized fit.
Right.
With customized conditions on hours of operation or screening along your north property line, because that's where the closest neighbor is. Vegetation shall be maintained at the property line to a depth of 15 feet, those kind of things that you hear.
Right.
So type 1, hours of review, how many hours?
I think it should be less than 1.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's a checklist that your staff should be able to do in less than 1 hour of review.
Okay. Numbers? Dave, number.
Cost?
$50.
I would think, you know, if you're looking, try to keep it standardized, and you know, what your administrative cost is, $50 is not outrageous.
What's your bill?
Well, 60-something, I think. That's not great. I don't. I just work and get my paycheck.
Oh, good up.
Sorry.
We actually have a couple of hours that are basically, if you had to pay me as a consultant, here's what you'd have to pay me. It's my loaded rate. So it's my salary, my benefits,
all
that kind of stuff put together. So we have a number for each one of our employees. And I think hers is about.
Closer to 80. No.
It's like 62.
Yeah, I was in the right ballpark.
So, we're talking 1 hour.
But I'm the lowest.
I probably am. Well, and that's part of what we're talking about. So that's probably a 1 hour at a Planner One level. Because the checklist doesn't have nothing to do.
More than likely, that checklist will make it so it's not the hour.
Right.
But you've still got your fee set there.
And there's other administrative type of situations that go on in this office also. The planner's hands are not the only one who touches it. It's taken in at the counter. It's put into our system by the department specialist. David assigns it to somebody. Then it comes to the planner. So there are
costs.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to do all that with this.
You're talking about an over-the-counter.
This is going to be an over-the-counter.
Then
this is like a development permit. How much time does it take to issue a development permit?
Somebody has to scan it.
It's definitely you.
Yeah. Now.
It's taking a lot of time.
We have new jobs.
About a 4 hour.
We have new jobs.
No. So how long does it take you to issue a development permit?
It depends, but anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes.
So you're looking at a checklist, you're issuing.
I think the half hour covers this then.
Yeah, I think it's one.
I think the 50 breaks us even, which is all we want.
How much is this to look at the future?
You didn't set your precedence.
Can be done as we move into the 21st century of Jotham County, done on the internet and do online registration, which eliminates.
Well, here's the thing, David, is that. We do require signatures. We do require fees up front. We don't take credit cards.
Okay, so the devil has advocate.
We're not up to the 21st century yet.
No.
We're just big county.
Nancy said 75.
Yeah.
We work with our applicants. We will let them fax things in. We will let them mail things in.
What the question?
The check has to come with it.
Yeah. We're still within the two-digit threshold. Does anybody want to push the three-digit threshold?
No, not for that.
No, not for the basic one.
Okay. So in type two, we're probably in our three-digit range.
Yeah, but here's my comment on that. I feel that this is something, same thing. It's a checklist, but now this is something where, so we're now, you know, possibly talking about the signs and the trucks being out there. You know, there's a trailer. That's where I'm thinking someone like Nan's going to want to look at the site plan. Not a plan review, but looking at the space. You know, it's like, is this a 20,000 square foot lot or is this a 20-acre lot, because that's going to have, like you showed in your little slide, you know, here's an excavation business, no site impact. Well, there's some things that are on county land that there's no way around the site impact on that. It's such a small lot.
Weren't we discussing maybe the possibility of a planner going out when you get to that level and doing a site visit?
At type 2, I think that might be difficult to do.
I think it would just have to be looking at the file, the map.
Occasionally, we might do that. We've got a home business right now that a guy's proposing that Valerie and I were talking about today.
and I'm kind of judicious with site visits because it takes people out of the office for a few hours, and other people have to cover the county, and we've got gas and all that kind of stuff we've got to cover. But in this case, it's a home business. We don't usually go out and visit the site. In this case, I wanted to.
There are some that there's no way you're not.
So if they're looking at a counter and they're like, we don't know, it
reloading
might.
Reloading supplies.
And,
reloading supplies.
The plot plan is a really basic tool and requirement for, there's very few applications we do where someone's not going to be turning in a plot plan and showing us what they are doing, how they are doing it, the structures on the property, what's involved. That's really, really basic for land use. It's our snapshot in time where we're very visual.
And they
show
us the
what
property
doing
on the map, you know,
right,
in the planning, the mapping program, and they can see what area it's around if they need to.
Right. So type two, I would consider as probably still a ministerial review.
Would it have agency transmittal?
What's that?
Would it have agency transmittal?
And it could morph into.
What do you mean by agency transmittal?
Our concerns are not the only ones that we look at. We also send out to other involved agencies, such as Public Works for access concerns, building safety for any type of structural concerns, the Water Master for increases in water use.
What's going on in the
system? I think type three would be maybe bring that into play. I think type two, you got to keep it simpler. So.
Mm-hmm.
You start bringing all that in, then you've got a lot of costs.
Right,
well,
so those become the things that would, I guess, tick that off, takes that we can kind of use that as a defining thing, is that gets it out of type two.
All of our pre-applications have agency transmittals. That's a $375 review.
When you say pre-applications, what do you mean by that?
Before you get approved.
So our typical land use process, you start out with a pre-application where basically you give us a basic idea of your proposal, and you submit a plot plan, a statement of your intent.
But you're talking about improvements, and we're talking
no,
about...
No, I'm talking about uses.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So then you're looking at, the minute you have a possible delivery, the moment you have employees who are going to be parking on the property, the moment you have deliveries, you're starting to look at just basic stuff like access.
Okay, so in the theory of this whole thing that we're doing, if someone's a type 2, are they paying the type 2 and that $325 as well?
No. So $375 in a pre-application, what you get back is comments from any agency that has been noticed that says that there's enough of a concern on their part that they want to make comment on your application.
But what I'm saying is
right,
this going to trigger that?
Our current process, and again, this is all new.
Okay.
So we can look at how we do things right now, but if we don't like it, we don't have to keep doing it that way. Right now, you have a pre-app fee, and then beyond that, you pay for your development fee.
Right.
Your review fee and a development permit. So in the type one, if we want to keep that cost down there, obviously we're not going to be charging a pre-app fee for that. That's over the counter. For type two, could be a combination of a pre-app process and a regular permit. We could also, Article 92 could be written that a pre-application is not required until you get here.
Right, and that's where
right,
I'm thinking type 2 should kick in.
So
right. I was comparing a type 2 to a pre-application
right,
in relative cost.
So if type 2 was $200, let's say, for that fee, just for throwing it off.
Three-digit fee,
yeah. So if it was $200, what would be the next fee? Like, how much would it cost to go through a
CUP?
Yeah.
Right now, at $2,000.
And so that scares a lot of people. So.
Right.
But
those numbers can change.
So we need to play with it. That's our next big threshold.
Correct.
To figure.
But last time we talked about two-digit, three-digit, four-digit.
Yeah.
And what those numbers are is will be hashed out. But part of what we would do is I want to talk about this now. It's not the last time we're going to talk about it, because once we come back to the draft ordinance and we look at these kind of thresholds and we look at the amount of review that's going to require, I'm going to go to my staff and say, okay, here's how we define a type 1, here's how we define a 2, and here's what the CUP level is going to be of those kind of uses. Pretty much, we've already done the work on a CUP. There's a reason that fee is $2,000. We've already done a study. Mike Snyder has a notebook about that thick of all the things that were done to try to assess whether CUPs, what that fee should be. And that's based on the number of staff hours, cost of notification, cost of mail out, cost of putting things in the newspaper, that sort of stuff. For type 2, we'll go through all of that. I think this one, we're probably right there in the ballpark from what we're describing. And I think I can fit an application process that will be efficient enough for my staff that we can hit that number. This one, I think, is probably already where it should be. Maybe we want to lower it. Maybe we want to go up. Maybe we want to go to time and materials. That's another thing that I've discussed with the commissioners, and that's going to come up in my budget presentation this spring. There are certain applications we take in where we bust the budget right away. And my department loses money, and I can't afford to keep people here because of it. And type 2, hours of review, I'm thinking if we can keep that in the, 4-hour range, 4 minus.
Yeah.
Some notification, and maybe this is a 3-hour review. Once we standardize staff reports and things like that, the first one always takes you more. After that, you start getting better at it, and the cost per application goes down. So maybe we're 3 hours or so of review, about an hour for the notification process. We have to send something to the paper, or we do a mail out to other agencies. And maybe that notification gets lumped into the application process. Do we need a pre-app? Is a question. Well, if we've got a checklist that tells us that you are a type 2, maybe I don't need a pre-app.
I don't see the need for a pre-app in the differences that we started talking about between
right.
1 and 2 up there.
So I'm envisioning a matrix where we check boxes, go through there, you're a type 2.
And there's a time frame here, too. Pre-app takes, 2 months, usually?
We're on a 4 to 6 week.
Yeah, so see, that throws people off, too, so we don't want to do that.
But what you have to realize also is we're not just looking at hours of review in that review time. You're looking at how many are stacked up in front of this application.
Oh, I know. And so it's a hard thing to...
No, but per application, that's how we're going to come up with the number.
Right. Yeah. I just think on the time frame that he was...
Well, I've had pre-apps take
but
in here 8 months. I mean...
Comprehensive zone change?
Well, I've had other ones. The little ones take that long, too. So I let them take 6 months. So,
for a pre-app?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
sorry.
So,
I don't
like that for
it. Yeah. notification
type.
I have a problem with the notification in type 2. I thought type 2 was without notification.
To from
what
agencies?
We discussed at the last...
You're talking about to other agencies, not neighbors, right?
Other neighbors.
Other agencies.
It's not to the neighbors.
Okay.
There's a difference between agency transmittals and public notice.
Okay.
Right. So, so then what's the turnaround time on hearing from the other agencies, though?
We'll
let. Oh, okay.
How long is it?
10 days.
Really?
Usually seven days.
Okay.
I mean, this is, I can walk you through it, but the typical pre-app is, comes in, takes and logs it in, sets up a sheet, which is sort of the sheet that we follow on our steps all the way through. So within a day or two, it's on my desk. I assign it to Valerie.
They all come to me.
And I give that assignment back to Ann, who then logs in that Valerie is the planner, sets up the agency transmittals. That goes out. The whole thing is landing on your desk for review probably
less than a week of the time that it first comes in from the counter.
So we've got comments coming in the 10-day period. So now we're probably 2 weeks out by the time we get everything coming in after that. The initial admin take-in time, the 10-day turnaround time from agencies. If it's a real short transmittal to agencies and they get back to us right away, it's faster than that. And then, like Barry said, they're stacked up because there's plenty of happening right now. She writes a report. It's my desk. I redline it if I need to. And give it back to her. It's issued 4 weeks. We've done them in 2 weeks. We've done them in 6 weeks. I just did one for the ODOT IAMP project, which is an amendment to the transportation system plan and the comp plan. Did all that. Agency transmittals. Had to call Public Works 3 times to get their comments. And took me 7 weeks.
But that's, you know, in this economy where we're at, there's not a lot going on. When it gets busy, then this whole thing gets convoluted and it takes a long time.
I have 16 applications right now.
How many?
16.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I'm conscious of that, and it's good that you bring it up, Ward, because I think that, you know, in type 2, if we're taking out that pre-app stage, and we're just saying through our checklist and our notification, that's our scoping. And we're not doing a pre-op. You just took out 4 to 6 weeks right there.
So this is really, type 2 could be a 2 to 3 week process is a reasonable assumption.
Oh, I'm thinking less
than that. Yeah.
Yep. I think that's reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, so type 1, we're basically, I walk in, give you the money, you check checklist, I walk out. And type 2, I fill out the application, you checklist, I give you the money, and in 2 weeks I know if I'm good.
Type 1's probably, we fax you the decision, and there's a sign-up, there's an approval line. We take it, we look at it. We have one person working the front counter. I've got a staff of 3 right now.
And Ann.
But we've got a person taking them in at the front counter. There are people stacked up like cordwood these days. You guys had to listen to me last. 315 people in the month of January. We're only open 20 hours a week.
Wow.
I'm busy.
The other day, James set the all-time high the other day.
You guys are doing other things other than what we're talking about here, right? I mean, you're talking about zoning issues. Here we're saying, I have to wait because you got to get all this other stuff for me to get a license? No, I won't even tell you what I'm going to do. That's what I'm saying is, I mean, I know your backlog or anything else, but is there any way that we say if we're trying to make people feel good about this thing, coming in and getting a license, not be backlogged by...
Well, buy me another staff person, Dave.
Valerie's
got, a guy comes in for his type 1 checklist. She hands him the permit. And he's got his checklist. Maybe he's downloaded his checklist online. And he's gone through it and he's handed it in.
Yeah.
But she's got 4 other people standing out there. Roger's in a meeting and James is sick.
I can't find my magic wand.
And I think a realistic time frame for a type 1 is probably like a 3-day turnaround. We take it in, we look at it, we go through the checklist, we fax it back.
But that's when they pay.
That's when they pay.
Yeah, and the same thing with the type 2. The type 2 is after the notification.
Right.
So you're 3 weeks maybe for this one, a little more review. We're actually writing a report, some sort of finding that you've met the application and we've got that notification, which is really where the time period is. We cut out the pre-app. We're going to save ourselves quite a bit of time there.
And not to get too much into the details, but part of that 3 hours should be here's an understanding of the uses, so if Nan is faced with an issue, here's what you signed off on, and here's the concerns we brought to you.
Right.
There's the clarity.
Yeah. Right.
The conditions of approval are what they are held to.
Right.
And we can have standard,
Correct.
So, and then, I mean, it's we shouldn't have to get past standard. I was going to type 2, you're going to have standard types of conditions. You're not going to get into creating anything special for this part.
I would think that you can get to some criteria that might get you a special condition. And the things that I think of, screening.
there is no standard screening thing. I mean, there is, you know, it's not always necessary in some properties, so I don't want to impose it. But if I know that I've got a neighbor right next door, you know, for a Type 2 application, you've got your notification out. We're going to have 3 hours to review that thing. We go through the checklist. We look at the plot plan. We pull it up on Puma. We go, gosh, there's two houses that are within, you know, 40 feet of this use. We have an opportunity for screening. And maybe we come up with some real simple criteria that we have right now in the code, in fact, about what we're looking at, both in standards and in the standards being these kind of things right here, and then some criteria that are maybe how we want to add a couple of conditions. This can be a quasi-judicial application. The only problem we're going to have with quasi-judicial, of course, is notice of neighbors. But I'll look into that in more depth. Down here.
Well, down maybe here, also, but then you, but
no,
then you go into...
Not at a Type 2 level.
See, honestly, it seems to me that we that there's a big jump between that Type 2 and the CUP.
Mm-hmm.
For what I see in review, to me that seems like a jump, and I feel like there should be some middle ground.
No, that's where I feel you just made the case for that. You are so short-staffed right now. If it's not cut or dry like this, we have no choice but for you to pay for that staff time to make the determination.
Right. There is middle ground there, though. A CUP is extreme. You know, I mean, that's the highest level of review that you're going to have. And then Type 2, I mean, you're talking about checklist.
Right. Yeah.
I think there's something between a checklist and generalized standards and full-blown CUP.
Well, I think you're right.
Well,
I think we could have a Type 3.
That's what the planner
have a pre-app with a Type 3 and have a little more of a
standard review. But yeah. It doesn't go to the CUP. No, you have standard review to actually go out and do that.
So it could be like a $750.
So that's...
The
most quasi judicial process.
most jurisdictions have three levels in their planning permits.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen this in many jurisdictions. A Type 1 is considered an over the counter permit. It's ministerial, there's no discretion, it's fairly quick. It's either an over the counter permit or it's the next day or two kind of permit. A Type 2 in most jurisdictions is an administrative site plan review. There may be very limited discretion in those criteria.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes it's, here's the things that you need to address in these criteria, Mr. Business Owner. Show me on your application what your proposal is on your site plan, how you've addressed those criteria. And then we just say, yep, you did it. Yes, you have screening. Yes, you're in an enclosed building. And yes, you have hours of operation that meet the rest of the code. We don't have that specified to a number or amount of screening or whatever, but you show me what you're doing, and then my condition to you is follow your site plan as you proposed it.
Okay. So let's go.
That's an administrative site plan review. And then a CUP, that's criteria. And that's, you start getting creative with one of those.
But I think what Valerie's saying...
This is not that unusual. Valerie hasn't dealt with it much because in this jurisdiction... We're quasi-judicial pretty quick. Our ministerial permits are very few, actually.
But Type 1, we're not looking at a plan. Type 2, just administrative look at a plan. CUP is quasi-judicial.
Right.
How do we define what's Type 3? What's the break between Type 3 and going to the CUP? Is it a simple notification if the neighbors sign off it's okay? And if the neighbors don't sign off, then it goes to CUP? Or, I mean, is there a way to make it cut and dry like that?
I think we need to stay ministerial here. And there are some different opinions. There's even more loopy cases on that. And what qualifies as a ministerial permit in here. And the reason that I want to stay there is that land use permits that are considered quasi-judicial in the state of Oregon have to have public notice. So you don't want to get the public notice until you get to a CUP, the excavation business, maybe the limited auto body business, or the landscaping business, and some of those that are bigger and have equipment and more potential impacts.
but in some properties they're going to make sense. A conditional use permit is quasi-judicial by nature, public notice, big fee, and maybe even a hearing option. I'm pretty uncomfortable with a neighbor being able to decide that something goes to a particular level or not. I think I would much rather have criteria that are fairly,
that's true,
make some threshold distinctions between that. And, you know, folks, we get home businesses, here's what the rules are when you bought your house. Now, you know, we are moving goalposts for people because they've already bought their house out there now. But frankly, right now they're dealing with 78 businesses when there's more like 700 in the county. I think most people are going to buy in.
You just made my argument to jump straight from type 2 to CUP, though.
Yeah, I think we do.
Okay.
From this type 2 to CUP. Yes. I don't think there needs to be a middle ground.
Okay.
One thing that's unique is in Justin County, I can make the decision on a CUP. Mm-hmm. So I think one of your questions is, do you feel that when you make that jump and you think about impacts and when you look at what some of those uses are, does it need to go to hearing?
So you can make the decision in office or yourself until someone appeals your decision, then it goes to a hearing. And
right. I can also make the decision to send it to you as a planning commissioner.
Okay.
That's in the code.
Okay. So why don't we
and
call
so,
that our type 3?
What's that?
Why don't we call that our type 3? Director or planning review, and then the next step after that is CUP.
This is, these are both director, essentially. It's Valerie in my stead as a type 1. A type 2 director is going to make that decision as well, but probably with some more criteria or some more standards and maybe limited discretion criteria. And CUP is either a public hearing, which I can decide. If you come to me with an application, let's say for a rock quarry in your ODOT. this is one award got here recently. But that was my call on whether that goes through a public hearing or not. And I have some criteria in the code that decide whether I take that to a public hearing or whether I decide it locally.
So, why don't we call that the type 3? Those are the ones that you decide on without going to public hearing. And then the CUP.
That is a CUP.
Oh,
though.
It still is.
It's the same thing. Yeah.
CUP can be with or without a hearing.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. So type 3 is CUP without a hearing, and CUP is with a hearing.
Essentially,
there's no type 3. Yeah.
Essentially, if I decide, Rick, that it's going to a hearing, the same fee. It's just that the county, you know, I'm expending more county resources at that point. I mean, it's more work, or it's a lot of work. There's more work to send it to a planning commission with a body of 9 making a decision. We go to a public hearing. We rent the ambassador. We send out public notice for the hearing. This is in addition to the public notice to neighbors within 250 feet. So all the adjoining neighbors get a notice of the CUP, which is required by statute. And then we take it to a public hearing or make the decision in-house. When I make that decision to go to a public hearing, I know I'm costing the county more money to do that. But my criteria in there is to say, if I've got a lot of neighbors complaining, and that's already in my code, if I've got a lot of neighbors complaining, I think it has a broader scope of impact. The Chancellor Quarry, which is just off 5-5 behind the rest area, they're going to do 24-hour rock crushing and all-night hauling.
Hmm.
You betcha. Those are a few and far
between.
No.
So I think the number of ones that would actually go to a public hearing, very few and far between.
Okay.
But I had a guy that applied for a business in the rural area that was a home occupation one time where he was doing French Wrangler training with his German Shepherds.
All right.
Big deal. And another guy that wanted to do sporting clays. Sporting clays go through the course. Walking through the woods and shooting
at night.
Clay pigeons that go off. I felt that was a lousy home business.
Oh, yeah.
But they were going to allow it as a home business in Clark County as a conditional use permit.
Yeah.
from allowed use in the zone to conditional use permit process.
Source parks are far.
Ugly, ugly, ugly.
You made a comment earlier, we were talking about the type 2, you know, well, the checklist or anything else, but if he doesn't follow the checklist, then why would we want to go to the expense of going to a CUP if the type 3 is, okay, you fall into all the areas of type 2, but you got a hedge you don't have, we need to have you put in a hedge. Your business. Why not some of those things that he doesn't, he qualifies as much as possible for type 2, except then that's a type 3, because it's not going to go to the planning department, it's not going to, I mean, the planning commission to go to CUP. If you go ahead and do these additional things, this is where you, the director, come in, that's a type 3. We don't want to waste their time on something that he meets all the criteria for type 2,
except for. Then I would make the decision as a CUP.
It would still be a CUP.
Because I can, yeah. It's still a conditional use permit, and there are criteria, and I can make conditions based on those criteria.
And that's what the fee for is, for you to think of whatever those mitigating factors are.
Right.
And would that be?
And to take in notice to neighbors. So we're, you know, you've got no notice. And notice the neighbors. You've got public agency notification here, which I'd still like to get. You're going to be dumping things down a septic tank or whatever. I mean, things oftentimes change on wells, septic, and access. And so I'd like to notify Public Works, DEQ.
So if a guy meets all the criteria except for one or two items.
In type 1?
Type 2? Yeah.
And the objective standards or the criteria, the limited criteria we're going to look at?
I guess.
Give me an example.
I guess the limited criteria. You made the comment about, well, everything falls in this guy's condition, but we need to put some kind of barrier. So, Mr. Business Person, right. You need to plant a hedge. Now, does that need to go to him to do that? Mm-hmm. That's your decision. Mm-hmm.
And I think I can make that in the type 2.
In the type 2.
Yeah. And those criteria are, they're limited discretion criteria. That's the term that's survived the test of the courts.
Yeah, because like Valerie said, I mean, it is a big jump from the, if we're going to do the 750 to the 2 grand, and it's only a couple items.
Yeah, no. Initial use permit is, you know, that's a pretty big deal.
Right. No, I understand that. Yeah. I mean, you know, like, if it boils down to you without wasting board's time, then that's what we need to do. That has, yeah. Decision has to be made here.
In terms of the breadth of categories, you know, type 1, easy. Make a decision in an hour. This is probably the fuzziest one.
Mm-hmm.
But and over that, I think the CUP is... we've already got a process for it, and I've got some criteria. Though I'm not real crazy about the criteria and CUPs in our code. But
as planning director, do you think you can come up with a list that you distinguish?
I do.
Yeah, this is less than 3 hours of my staff's time, pretty much most of the time.
Where I'm going to lose money is this one.
Right. But we're not changing anything with that one. So
on this one. On this
I take no responsibility for that.
on type two,
no,
3 hours.
That is to me, Nancy, right?
4 hours, 5 hours of the time. You know, to me, that's probably in the, you know, $400 range.
Right.
Something like that.
Okay.
$375, like... which is what we charge for a pre-op right now.
Mm-hmm.
I see that's about the amount of work I'm looking at.
$399.99
or something.
Yeah. I still say the $250.
Yeah.
Or $250. Yeah, throw some numbers at me, right there. Let's say Valerie is $62 an hour for a time. Type two, I think. Need to get out of here.
We're going to have to get up a few hours.
3:50?
Max.
It
is 4:30. I'm thinking you could have something at
2:50.
for it? I had 250.
And cheap.
I would think the 250 is a good number.
I would have said $200, you know.
And not that you want your pricing structure to be crazy, but you might go with a minimum, but if it runs over hours or it runs over a different criteria that you have to go through, make it this is our minimum, you pay that now. If it runs extra, then we have an additional fee.
But that starts complicating the process again,
yes,
and
sure.
We're trying to keep everything simple for everybody.
The problem with that
to get to the higher level.
Blunt in this county, selling the fact that I get to, as the government, decide how much time I'm going
okay.
to bill you.
That point.
And the matter of fact, some of these things are going to run less, and some will run more. So hopefully,
yeah.
at the end of the day, it's
we have two thresholds or two ways we can calculate these according again to state statute. I can charge the actual cost of service, or I can charge the average cost of service. So when I'm looking at these, I want default to average. Until I get a system in place where we're all, and I have no accounting system, I have no timekeeping system right now that in place that I can do this, that we can really start doing time and materials. So the guy that takes, $6,000 to get through the process, we're going to charge him that. And the guy that takes $50, we'll charge him that. Until I've got that system in place, I don't want to go there. I'm going to try to look at average.
Maybe you turned.
Thank you.